Hello, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks.
Great. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. And
Not a problem.
yeah, sorry about the little mix-up today.
Oh, that's all right. No, that's completely my fault. I had another conference call at 1, and that one got canceled, so I was trying to figure out which was which.
Okay, no problem. All right, so hey, if you're ready, we'll just get started.
Sure.
All right, great. Let's start with your year of graduation and your major.
I graduated in 2006 and I majored in professional music.
Very cool. And what was your principal instrument?
Drum set.
Nice. All right. Well, hey, we'll get to your history later. But
Okay.
for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
I am the executive director of the YMCA of Greater Hartford. So, the YMCA of Greater Hartford employs, depending on the time of year, between 1,000 and 2,500 people. We oversee 69 communities within the state of Connecticut, and we do that over the course of 13 branches that spread throughout the state. So we have 2 resident camps, we have 6 full facility branches, we have some summer day camps, and we have some program participant branches that take place all around the state of Connecticut.
Wow, very nice. And you supervise that all.
Yes.
That sounds like quite a lot on your plate.
It's
Oh.
a little. There's a lot of talented people who make it happen. I am hardly the one that does it all, but it kind of rolls up to me in the end.
Sure. So, in terms of this supervisory type position, I'm a little curious, like, how much of it is managing people? How much of it is budget? How much of it is fundraising? Like, what do the actual duties entail that you're doing? Are you reading reports, direct observation?
Yes, there's so right now I probably only have maybe 4 people that report directly to me. And then those 4 people have a whole pot of people that will report directly to them and so far, so forth and so on. A large part of my job is fundraising. It's really storytelling. Which is kind of the same way I fell in love with songwriting, but it's the story, telling the story of the mission that we're trying to accomplish as a nonprofit organization and the people that we're serving. So, it's telling our story and going out and really showing how we're impacting lives in our communities and asking for people to fund those programs through maybe corporate dollars or individual donations. So I would say that's probably about 40% of what I do. Budget management and innovation, is a big part of what I do as well. So trying to really harness what's new, what will create revenue, what's working and what's not working, and making sure that we're not clinging to mistakes just because we spent a long time making them and, constantly refreshing ourselves and making sure that we're staying ahead of the curve. Our annual operating budget is about $33 million.
Wow.
I directly oversee about 23 of that, and then the remainder is through some other branches. So that's a large part of it. And then looking at how we look at our members and how we tackle our day-to-day marketing of our programs and making sure that we're in the right places.
Gotcha. Now, of course, the YMCA is a national organization. You said you manage the Greater Hartford branch. So, are you then reporting to higher ups?
Yes. So so I'm just the executive director here. There's above me, there's a whole line of C-level positions and vice presidential positions that report to our chief operating officer here in Hartford. And he was actually the former senior vice president of the Greater Boston YMCA. And our former CEO is now the CEO of the Greater Boston YMCA. And the CEO of the Greater Boston YMCA just became the CEO of the National YMCA in Chicago. So I report up to our CEO, and he reports up to Kevin Washington, who is now the CEO of YUSA.
Understood. So, hey, if you wouldn't mind, can we zoom in a bit? And to the extent that you have a typical day, what does it look like? And
It's
if the
really.
days vary too much, we can do a typical week.
That's all right. It's really all over the place, which is what I love about it. It's not one static thing, punch a clock and fill out these reports. It's a lot of relationship building, is meeting with people in the community, talking about what we have to offer and what they have to offer us. So really being able to share resources. It's being a part of the community so that the community comes to know me and by proxy the organization. So for instance, I sit on the board of the Rotary Club. We have different members within our association that are in Lions Club, Kiwanis. I sit on Chamber of Commerce, things like that, so that people get to know my face. I'm really impacting the things that are happening in the cities, so that when it comes time for us to ask things, I can speak educatedly about the things that are going on in the cities and what we've done to kind of eradicate some of those issues that are going on. So that's a lot of, that's mostly evenings and lunch times are taken up by things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where my office is right now, we just built a brand new facility for, I'm out of the Glastonbury YMCA, which is one of our branches. And we moved from just a storefront for the last 50 years into now a big facility branch. And my focus in creating this branch was to kind of make not your typical YMCA, but the strongest arts and humanities YMCA in our state. So where you would normally see a large, workout area and gymnasium and things like that for health and wellness, we do have that. It's a little bit smaller, but our large space is actually a 100-seat theater where our musical theater club can perform and dance classes rehearse and private music lessons. So I've spent a lot of time in the past year finding the land to be able to build, making sure that the project goes up on time, dealing with town planning and zoning to be able to open on schedule, and really handling the financial end of things and getting all the permits. So our building just actually officially opened on Monday, 2 days ago. So,
oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It was a long time coming.
and you're probably aware Berkeley built a skyscraper a few years back, and I can tell especially the president and the higher-ups were so excited about it. Cause...
And it's beautiful. I was up for the opening, and they did the alumni day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So, gotcha. Okay, so that's another part of your day was, at least until recently, dealing with a lot of the building stuff.
Right. And then overseeing individual programs that are going on. I like to spend a decent amount of time talking to the members and the parents of kids, visiting our different sites, making sure that they're running well operationally, and then meeting with my leadership team to make sure that they have the support that they need. Then reviewing those reports to make sure, on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, did we hit our target revenue? Did we keep expenses where they needed to be? What do we need to adjust? So it's really just, it's a lot of different things that no 2 days are really alike, which is what I love about it.
Sure. Now, the YMCA is a nonprofit organization, although I get the impression that with a lot of nonprofits, there's some cross-subsidization, right? Certain things make money. Other things cost money, and it all evens out at the end, or you get some donors. Are there, I was a little curious in terms of the stuff you supervise, is that like money maker or supposed to break even, and or is, does it vary depending on what you're looking at?
It all depends. So nonprofit basically just means that we're not turning revenue into individual profits for stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
So as a nonprofit, any revenue that we do generate revenue, we do make money, we do pay people, but the money that we generate goes back into creating quality programs for the community or building quality facilities and really serving a need in the communities that we serve. So as far as our fundraising, we will raise funds for two separate purposes, our annual campaign that goes on throughout the year. That usually raises about $3.2 million, I believe, association-wide. And that money directly goes to give financial assistance to children and family in need to be able to participate in our programs. So none of that money is spent on any operations or anything like that. It would be if a single parent is going back to work and they can't afford childcare, then we would pay for that childcare or give a percentage off using those funds. Or if they can't afford to go to camp, we run a Livestrong program for cancer survivors. we never charge any of those people, so it would pay for the programs that they need.
Gotcha. It's a lot like financial aid at a college.
Exactly. So that's what that money is raised for. The other type of money that we raise is for capital projects, and we make sure that people know that they're for capital projects. And those dollars are used to create and improve properties. So
like the building you just...
Right. So we just built a 60,000 square foot facility in Putnam, Connecticut that opened almost a year ago this month. And so that we raised $14 million to put that building up. And that was a whole capital campaign. We took 10 years and really laid it out and showed people what they were getting and went to individual donors, people who, you know, wanted their namesake to be on the building, that type of thing. So we laid that out, and that money was specifically for that. But it's not always for construction. Sometimes it's because a building needs a new roof or the pool needs to be fixed, something like that.
Mm-hmm. So those are the big things you get donor dollars for, and then you're basically expected to break even on the other stuff.
Right. The revenue we generate through programs pays for operations and salary and programs and supplies. Everything else pays for scholarships or construction, basically.
Understood. That's great. Well, hey, in order to qualify for these interviews, you have to enjoy what you do. And I did hear you mention that you like the variety, but if you could go just a little more into what is it about your job, or at least your field, that you enjoy?
I love my job. I'm very lucky. I wake up every day excited to go to work, which sometimes is very rare in the workforce, so I'm lucky to have that experience. I get to see firsthand how being kind to people and people giving of their time, talent, and treasures and life-changing programs really impact, you know, normal everyday people. That people come in this building and they're happy, they're excited. A lot of them wouldn't be here but for the financial assistance we're able to provide. We don't turn anybody away due to inability to pay. We will subsidize that program till somebody can afford it because we believe that everybody deserves this experience. And that's something that on my own as a person, I could really never provide. But as the head of this organization, I really get to oversee some transformative experiences. And that's been really important to me. So just knowing that my work has a purpose and it's not necessarily, you know, you're just kind of making a cardboard box that'll ship out to somebody. And yes, it's useful, but it's like you're creating these programs that are actually changing lives and you can see the lives being changed in front of you. That's what's really serving that purpose for me.
Well, that's terrific. Hey, let's take it back now to 2006.
Okay.
Or earlier, if you wish. There you are. You graduated in the spring?
Yes.
So there you are, right, heading in toward graduation. I mean, were you thinking nonprofit management?
No. I never thought that it would move this way. I was, like most of the people that leave Berkeley, I was going to be a rock star. And then you find yourself the afternoon of graduation thinking, man, I'm homeless now. And I got this piece of paper, but I wonder where I'm going to get dinner. And I got to get a job. And so,
I'd like you to take us kind of the whole way from there to where you are now, step by step, including
right.
your headspace.
Right. So I always thought that I would just kind of figure it out after I left Berkeley. You know, this piece of paper is supposed to be the magical key to everything. And I learned so much while I was there and just had unbelievable experiences. So while I was there, I got to establish, you know, quite a few connections around the country of different bands that I was playing with and musicians I was writing for. So I was playing fairly regularly, probably five nights a week. You know, sometimes making good money, sometimes not really making good money. But the schedule kind of got erratic. So you get used to playing, you know, going out 8 p.m., coming back in the house at 3 a.m., that type of thing, and uh-huh. and driving halfway across the state to make $50 or $100 or whatever it is. And I was doing that for a long time. About a year after I graduated, I realized that there was this whole daytime that existed when I wasn't out doing those nighttime gigs. and that was really an opportunity for me to make some money so that I could get a nicer place to live and a nicer car. And I was teaching part-time in the afternoons as the drumline instructor for a high school here in Connecticut.
A
But
public school?
yes, Rockville High School in Vernon, Connecticut. And I did that part-time through Berkeley as well. I would come back sometimes on the weekends, and they had a competitive marching band. So
Gotcha.
I knew that I enjoyed teaching and instruction. So I was just kind of looking through some different possibilities, and I saw an opening at this place called Preschool of the Arts for a music teacher. And I just thought, wow, that's a really interesting name, thinking that you're getting kids into the arts at such an early age. And so I applied for it, and it was really like 4 hours a day. You would just go in and you teach music to preschool kids. And I just had a blast. And I did that for about a year, and that place ended up closing due to some financial mismanagement. So I found another preschool, and they didn't have a music program. And I said, I've got this program that I've basically created over here. I'd be happy to bring this over here and work for you guys doing this.
Quick
And they,
question about the music job. Was this just like you just applied for it? You saw the posting and applied, or did you know somebody there, have a connection?
I saw the posting. I think it was a Craigslist find. So I applied, and I was more qualified than most of the people who were willing to work for that amount of money at the time.
Gotcha.
So they took me.
And then this next place, you said you found one. Was this also a job opening, or did you just reach out and say, hey, you could use a music program?
Yeah, I just went in there, and I said, I've got this program. It'll make your programs more appealing here, saying that you can offer arts programming in your school. And they jumped on it. So I was probably working maybe 5 hours a day there for a couple of years.
Nice.
And so in the meantime, I was playing shows at night. I still had summers off, so I would go and do my mini East Coast tours on the summer with a jazz trio or a rock trio and
You're
kind of
living the
live.
Berkeley grad's dream.
That's right. That's right. And
You're
it was
playing gigs, you're teaching music, you're touring.
exactly. And so I always had maybe six or seven jobs at a time, whether it was, working at the high school in the afternoons and working at the preschool in the morning, and then writing some music for a different school, and then going out and playing a show at night. It was just kind of that hodgepodge of everything. And during that time, I recorded a couple of records and got them out there. And I was just, I enjoyed it, but at the same time, it's like you get to that point where you're just kind of barely surviving, and it helps that you love it because you don't mind that you're barely surviving, but you start to think, I'm getting a little bit older and I want to have a family and I need to be able to support them in some
Okay, so you were kind of just treading water financially, even with
way.
all this. Gotcha.
Right. So I spoke with actually my roommate from Berkeley, and he at that time, this is, let me see, maybe 2008, end of 2008.
Okay, it's
He
about
was,
2.5 years.
yep, he was the guitarist for the United States Navy rock band, and that was how he found a way to, make money with his music, as he went into the Navy, knew it would be a steady gig. So I was on the phone with him, and we'd talk maybe once a week, but he was about to have a kid, and he was married already, and I was just asking him how he liked it. And he said, you know what? It's not always the greatest, but I'm making music. I don't ever worry about where my paycheck's coming from. I know that my family can go to any hospital and get the best care. It's just kind of that, he felt like he was at peace, and he was confident, and he was still following his dream. So I went to enlist, and I never thought that I would do that, but I walked into a recruiter's office and I said, I want to be the drummer for the Navy rock band for the Northeast. And they set me up with all these interviews, and I auditioned up in Newport, for the Newport band, and I got in.
Can I ask a quick question? I mean, is
Yes.
this a civilian job, or is this a.
No, it's you enlist and you have to,
So,
you're in the Navy.
quick question there. I'm curious. Let's say you enlist and they like somebody else's drumming more. Are you now, the mechanic on a submarine?
Well, that happened to my father. My father, they made him all these promises, and So he enlisted, and then they said, "Nope, you don't qualify." And he ended up, you know, wiring radios on a ship or something like that. So he always warned me about that first. But so the approach that I took was you have to pass the audition and become what they call job locked before you actually enlist.
Okay.
So I went up and I met with the chief petty officer up there. I got my paperwork. I signed a contract saying that I would immediately be sent to the music A school in Virginia, and then that would be my career. And they tell you how much money you're going to make, and you know your pay grade, all that. So
okay, so if you don't pass the audition, then no harm, no foul. Each go your own ways.
Right.
Cool.
So I passed the audition. And I went to enlist, but I was over the weight limit at the time.
Oh, no.
So they put me on this crazy diet where I only ate broccoli and water for 3 months.
Oh.
And I lost 82 pounds in those 3 months. And so I got to where I was processing to ship to boot camp, and they said, "Hey, we can't send you to boot camp right now because you have a protein deficiency because you haven't eaten any protein in 3 months." So they ended up sending me down to Virginia Beach instead, where I was just kind of working part-time with the Navy band, but I wasn't officially in. So I would kind of play as like an alternate on when some subs would deploy and, you know, a few White House gigs and things like that. So I hung around there for about a year. And then they said, "Look, it's going to be another year and a half before we're going to be able to ship you and you can do what we promised you. You can either leave right now or you can stay here and keep doing this." And I, at that point, decided to walk away because it really wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Gotcha. Were you getting paid while you were doing this, or like paid the full rate or just paid?
No, it's kind of like a stipend position.
Gotcha.
So to supplement that, while I was down there, I was working in some kind of youth development programs in Virginia Beach, doing similar things to what I was doing up here to supplement my gig income. And then I was playing in the evenings on the you know, on the boardwalk there, Atlantic Avenue in Virginia Beach. You'd hit some of those clubs right around summertime, and they'd be packed, and you'd just, you know, play. It was like a singer-songwriter type of deal. So I'd go in there with a piano or an acoustic guitar and you know, make $100 for the night, something like that.
Uh-huh.
So I decided I wanted to come back to Connecticut, which is where I was raised. And at the time, I had just met the person who is now my wife. Mm-hmm. So you know, we started dating, and you know,
she in Connecticut?
Yep.
Okay.
So we had just met, and you know, when you're dating somebody, you kind of need some money. So I started looking around for other positions. I went back to teaching part-time at the high school and playing some gigs, but I really wanted something more solid. And so a position opened up as the first director of arts and humanities for the New Britain Berlin YMCA. They were looking to start an arts program there. And I really didn't know much about the Y. I knew, you know, you just kind of think about the gym and swim aspect of things, but you don't think about them being heavy in the arts necessarily. Yeah. And I thought, man, this sounds really cool.
And by the way, we're in like 2010 now, right?
Yes, I started January 29th of 2010.
Gotcha. So, again, this was just you saw the position advertised, you applied, you got it.
Yep, it was another Craigslist find.
Cool.
Yeah. And
you're still working in music, though.
Yes. So I loved every minute of it. I got to create some awesome programs. You know, we started a YMCA drumline, a show choir, a musical theater club. We did a music production and engineering class. And so in doing so, you know, they didn't have money to pay for the creation of these programs and all the equipment that comes along with it. So I did an online certification in grant writing for nonprofits so that I could start requesting some grant dollars. And so as I'm moving, you know, further in this career, I get a couple of years in, and the CEO says, you know, I like how you're getting all of this grant money in. We would like to alter your position to include being, you know, director of grant administration and financial development. And really working on our membership too, because you've done a good job kind of marketing. You know, it's like you do everything in those positions. You have to get on Facebook and market the programs and you know, and really just out there and fight for every dollar you
If
get.
you're good, someone who's good at grant writing and fundraising is pure gold for a nonprofit, almost literally.
Right. And I'm lucky to have two great grant writers right now that get us lots and lots of dollars for us to be able to do good things. But you know, I was mediocre at it, but I was the best person there at the time. So I got the job, and I said, you know, you never really want to say no when you're starting out. So I of course said yes, and I took that position, and then that evolved
And of course,
into,
so that now you're not doing primarily music anymore, but it's a promotion.
Right. So I was still doing all the things that I was doing before, just with the addition of these new things.
They give you a raise?
I think it's like $1,000 a year or something extra that they give to do double the work. But you know, again, you're hungry and you're saying, let's do this. So, but I enjoyed it. And then that involved into, I oversaw all youth and family programs, then all marketing and membership and all financial development. And this is with, this YMCA is what you would call an independent Y. So it means that it wasn't part of a big association like I'm in now, where there's several YMCAs under one jurisdiction. It was like one building that operates kind of rogue from any other rules that are going on.
Okay.
So I realized that first of all, I needed financially to grow in my career, and I wanted professionally to grow in my career, but the CEO was, you know, 50 years old. He wasn't going anywhere for the next, you know, 10 or 15 years, and I was kind of next in line behind him. So if I wanted to grow at all, I was going to have to leave. But I really didn't want to leave the organization. I needed to leave that association.
Right.
So I applied for a lateral move position with the YMCA of Greater Hartford.
So this was just kind of an internal thing, I assume. You
That's
said,
right.
Hey, I want to move, and they're, oh, there's an opening here.
Well, so no, you actually, they're completely separate, each different association. So you really have to apply. It's certainly helpful, and you get a strong recommendation if you're coming from another Y. And I had put in 5 years at my former Y first. So I applied in, what year was it? The beginning of 2015.
Okay.
And I got the job as the director of membership, sales, and service for the Hartford Y. And when I took that, I really shook off all the add-on responsibilities that I was having at my former Y. So all the arts and humanities things kind of melted away, and I was doing just the new role.
And was this, okay, just not guess too much, did this come with a pay bump, or was this just again?
Yeah, that was a large increase.
Okay.
To make that jump from that association. And it was a difficult choice for me because I knew I'd be leaving behind some of those musical aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But I really knew that this was the career path that was interesting me.
Sure.
And I knew that I didn't want that job forever, but the job would lead me to where I wanted to go, and hopefully rather quickly. Mm-hmm. So this job was in the north end of Hartford. So if you don't know anything about the north end of Hartford, it's the third poorest census zip code in the United States.
I was going to say, when you said Greater Hartford, I think like Hartford is like a poor pocket in a wealthy state.
Right.
Or at least part of Hartford.
So downtown Hartford is gorgeous, and it's really the insurance capital of the world. Mm-hmm. So you have Aetna and the Hartford and, you know, all the insurance companies. And we've got a great, beautiful branch there too, 46,000 square feet, all marble floors and, you know, four floors. But if you go a mile and a half north, you hit the north end of Hartford, which is extreme poverty. The unemployment rate is just through the roof. You know, nobody has a car. People's houses are all, you know, they're one step from being condemned, but they're still living in them. Nobody has any money. And that was just a real eye-opener for me to be functioning in a sales position in an area that doesn't have any money to buy what you're selling, but really needs it.
Right.
And that's where I really started to connect to the mission of what the Y does, because I would go knock on some of these doors that I had no business knocking on, as the chubby white guy from out of town, and try to convince people that I wasn't out to get their money, but I was trying to hook them up with these programs, and I was going to offer them financial assistance on this, but they needed to come down and they needed to see me. And it was one of the greatest years of my life, and it was also one of the toughest years of my life. I saw people like that got, that were in the night before, and the next morning they were in the paper and they were dead.
Wow.
Or, that a lot of people getting hit by cars just walking across because people don't care to stop at traffic lights. So you're standing out there at 11 o'clock at night holding somebody's head waiting for the ambulance. And I knew that I really didn't have the stamina to be there for much longer. And so I had applied for this executive director spot because I knew that it's something that, where I really wanted to get, and I thought it would be a long shot.
Yeah,
But I ended
that sounds like a substantial promotion.
yes. And I had, I didn't think I was there long enough to get this, but I applied, and then it was last January 5th, so just over a year ago, that I got a phone call saying that I got this job.
Wow.
So I've loved the last year, and I actually just got promoted again about a week ago. So now instead of just being the executive director for one branch, I'm overseeing the execs from the whole association.
From the whole greater Hartford.
Right. So
Oh,
that
so
started.
what, which branch were you before?
So I was over just the Glastonbury branch.
Gotcha.
So now each branch still has an exec, but they'll report into me for anything having to do with membership, retention, strategy, that type of thing. And then I will still remain over the Glastonbury branch that I've just finished building here, so that we can grow the. This is where I'm getting back into the arts and humanities programs, because we're really a strong arts Y, one of the strongest in Connecticut. So I really get to have a first hand in developing a lot of these programs that we're setting out to do as a strong arts Y.
Well, that's terrific. That's interesting that you were there for 5 years, and then in basically 1 year and a change, you got two promotions, very big ones.
Yes.
Although, as you
No.
said, not so much promotion as you applied and got it.
Right. So it's, I mean, if you're looking in terms of finance, from where I started when I applied to be the Arts and Humanities Director in 2010 to where I am now, my salary's tripled.
Nice.
And it's not because I was stagnant. It's because I went out and I did some things that I didn't necessarily want to do, but I knew the path that they were leading me through. So, it's important, I would say, to convey that message that you're not always going to be doing exactly what you want to do, but as long as you can see the path, take it and do everything you can to get to that next level if it's what's going to make you happy.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, hey, yeah, and on that note, let's move on to the third part of the interview, of three.
Sure.
So, my first question for you, and you alluded to this a bit in terms of helping build out the arts and humanities programs of the WISE that you oversee. But besides that, could you describe what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
I still have music is very important to me. I think it's even more special to me now that I'm doing it because I love doing it and not that I'm doing it because I need it to put a roof over my head.
Could I tell you, you're not the first, second, or 10th person who has said that?
I can imagine that. It was, I love doing music professionally, and part of that is to say that you're doing music professionally, and you almost feel like you're giving up on your dream when you take something else. But at the same time, this allows me to choose the things that I'm going to be most passionate about, whether it's, this gig that maybe only pays a couple of bucks, but it's really fun and it's in line with where I want to be musically right now, as opposed to, well, this pays the most, even though it's monotonous and boring, so I'm going to take this.
Gotcha.
So
So, yeah, so what are you doing musically in terms of?
So on Sunday mornings, I'm the director of music for Christ the King Lutheran Church in Windsor, Connecticut.
Okay.
So I direct their choir and I play piano there. I also have a relationship with, I've worked at several high schools throughout the year, so I maintain my relationship with them. So whenever they do a musical theater performance, I'm always playing drums in the pit for them. So I've got four or five musicals coming up this spring that I'll play for.
Fun.
I still write quite a bit of music. I try to release a new album maybe every 2 years or so on iTunes and Amazon, and I do it mostly because I like doing it and getting it out there, but it's nice to kind of get that revenue as well sometimes when those royalties come in. And then I have two bands that I play with on a regular basis. One is an acoustic rock trio and one is an electric rock trio. So we play a lot of outdoor festivals and fairs and bars and things like that. It's like a Friday, Saturday night type of deal. So there's weeks when I play, four or five shows in a week, and there's weeks when I play once. But I'm still very, very connected to the music scene. I'm just doing it now because I love to do it and not because I have to do it. And then
Oh,
I'm sure,
yeah, no, it sounds like you're very connected
and I'm
for.
sure, what I'm, my goal is, when I retire, I'll just play music all the time and I'll have a blast and, whatever I want to do, just go out and have some fun playing music. But to be able to find this grouping of playing music at night and doing some great mission-driven work and having health insurance during the day has been a great dichotomy for me.
That's terrific. Hey, so next question.
Sure.
Now, obviously, as the caveat, right, your first position with the Y was that musical director position.
Yep.
And then, of course, that positioned you very well to then apply for and get these non-musical jobs in
Right.
the Y. But sort of putting aside that career path thing, thinking about what it is you're doing right now for work. And thinking back to your Berkeley education, is there anything you feel that your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing right now?
Absolutely. I loved my Berkeley experience, but as you would get from any musician around there, things aren't just handed to you when you're at Berkeley. You have to meet people to be getting these gigs. You have to network. You have to go out there and say, "Here I am. Here's what I can provide," and then you start to, form these alliances, and you go out, and then you're getting paid to do what you love. And that's really what I do every day, is I go out, I make sure that there's nobody in the community that doesn't know what we do, who I am. I show up at these things and I shake hands so that we have a presence, so that people, when they're going to do something, they'll think of the why. And I build those relationships, and I really learned to do that at Berkeley. Also, the YMCA is big global center of excellence for diversity and inclusion. Nobody's turned away from the Y. We accept all people, all faiths, all religions. And as you know, at Berkeley, it's just a giant melting pot of, international students, people from all sorts of backgrounds and all sorts of walks of lives. And that's something that I didn't get while I was growing up in, suburban Connecticut. I was really exposed to that for the first time at Berkeley, that kind of, racial diversity, sexual orientation, gender diversity. That's something that you're really exposed to at a school like Berkeley. And that set me up to be sensitive and to be observant about what's going on around me and kind of culturally prepared to make sure that I'm welcoming to those people in this position.
Absolutely. Oh, and just curious, because you do Greater Hartford, so does your region include the city of Hartford still?
Yes.
Gotcha. So, yeah, you have a large diversity of people who are in all these programs.
Absolutely.
Very nice. All right. Well, hey, let's turn that question around now.
Okay.
Because you went to Berkeley knowing it gave that one degree, a bachelor's of music.
Yep.
And indeed, you know, you weren't getting rich, but you were working in music for a while, and then even your first YMCA job was a musical job. But all that said, you know, and what given, you know, and it led you to great places. All that said, is there anything where you look back at your Berkeley experience and you say, you know, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
Mm.
Anything you feel that was missing or at least inadequate in your Berkeley education?
I wouldn't necessarily say inadequate, and I would say that some of those things that I might feel that way about were offered, but I just opted not to participate in them, maybe. I've always had kind of a touch-and-go relationship with math, you know, all through my high school year. I hated it. And so that really excited me at Berkeley, that the only way you were forced into taking a math class was if you were going to be in acoustics, anything like that, then you had to take, you know, math.
Right. Or the music business majors take statistics.
Right. But so I was excited when I was at school. I was like, guess what, guys? I'm done with math. And, you know, and they offered math. I could have taken it as an elective, but I almost would have rather have been forced to continue to take some higher level math courses. So that, you know, once you, and it's something that applies to not just me in a budgetary role, but a musician who's going out and making money. How are you budgeting yourself? You know, how are you, knowing how much you're bringing in versus how much things cost, and what are these formulas for you to know how much money you need to make, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think would also be very valuable, for people as they're coming through the Berkeley experience is something in credit management.
Define credit management. I don't quite understand what that is.
So I remember my very first day at Berkeley, there was a table outside of 150 Mass Ave,
mm-hmm.
and it was guys who were signing people up for these credit cards with a picture of the Uchida building on it.
Oh, like financial management.
Yep. And I'd never had a credit card before, and so I applied and I was approved for a Berkeley credit card with a credit line of like $500. And that was my first credit card. And I remember using it for the first time at this place called Marché, which was like right off of Belvedere Street.
Okay.
And then the bill came in the mail, and I'm thinking, oh, I got to pay this off. It's $30. And then the bill came in the mail, and the minimum payment was like $10. I was like, you mean I don't have to pay this all back right away? And it was that moment I would pinpoint as the beginning of the end, where like it just kind of like spiraled out of control for like the next several years until, you know, I really just, you know, 5 or 6 years later, I'm like, I got to get a handle on this and get my credit back in order again. But nobody ever sits you down and talks to you about, here's what a credit card does and here's what you need to be doing or else this will happen. And so that kind of, you know, introduction to finance and credit, I think, should be mandatory for every student.
Gotcha. A great answer. All right. Well, next question I have for you is, again, your experience after Berkeley is almost, to the extent that there is something typical, you know, that's extremely common, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doing
sure.
lots of different things, putting together a living, not getting rich. And
yep.
That, of course, that ultimately led onto this great career path with the YMCA that you're still on.
Right.
Now, I'm sure you're aware that there are other, let's say, recent Berkeley graduates who haven't yet found that great path.
Mm-hmm.
And some even current students, maybe in their last year, staring out into the big scary world and going, oh my God, what comes next?
Right.
So for either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
I would say really give it time, first of all. If there's something that you're really passionate about, you have to pursue that with your whole self, and you have to really be willing to do anything to make it there, whether that be moving, going to a different location. Just not everything is going to be if you return to Alabama. Like, that's not the music capital of the world, so it might be tough to get gigs there. You need to decide if you really want to be a performer, you have to go to LA, you have to go to New York, and be willing to dump yourself into it. You have to be willing to not make money for a while and know you're not going to be rich at this right now. And you're going to have to live in a terrible apartment and, you know, be eating bologna and pasta for a couple months before things are really going to take off. And you can't be afraid to do things that maybe you don't want to be doing in the end, but you think might lead you somewhere good. So if you want to work for a record company, you know, as a whatever, as an A&R guy, or if you want to, I don't know, if you want to work somewhere and there's an opening, you know, making the morning coffee, and that's the only job, take the job so that you're there and your foot is in the door, and then go above and beyond, even if you're not getting paid for it, and prove to these people that they can't live without you. And that's really what got me to the next level. Is, you know, my wife would always yell at me, is like, you're not getting paid to do that. Why are you doing that for these people? And I do it because eventually, if I were to go away, they're going to say, you know, what happened? This was the guy that used to do that. So they're going to want to hang on to me. And so they're going to eventually move me to the next thing. And everything that I've done and worked hard for has moved me to the next spot. So just keep working, put 100% of what you have into it, regardless of what your job description is, and push until you have it.
Hey, that's awesome advice. It takes me back to when I was first hired at Berkeley, and the old chair was about to retire, and he called me into his office, and he said, make yourself indispensable.
That's excellent.
Yep.
Excellent advice.
So, okay, let's actually zoom in, or let's say refocus that question, though.
Okay.
Because I forget, you might be my 63rd interview.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
And right. What you're doing with all these interviews, like, are you making a, is this used for, like, coursework, or are you just kind of putting together stories to help people, or what?
Good question. It's a very multi-purpose project.
Okay.
So, let's see, I actually, I'll start at the beginning. One thing is, I don't know if you looked at that site, otherberkeleygrads.com.
I looked a little bit, yeah, but I haven't been all the way
through. Oh, I wouldn't expect anyone to go all the way through. But
yep.
The point is that, right, there's the page with all the interviews. So it's meant to be a career resource for Berkeley students and grads. For, I will say, probably not all students. It probably will help alumni more than current students, because students mostly are still thinking they're going to work in music.
Sure.
But as people start thinking about other things, I feel like a lot of people might feel more comfortable and confident doing something to be able to hear a long interview with one or maybe five people who also went to Berkeley, also were thinking music once upon a time, and now are going into this other career. What's this actually like?
That's so great.
So that's one thing, is just the interviews themselves as a resource. Then, I'm happy to send it to you. I did, just this past January, and then last night, in fact, two presentations where I went through and tabulated everything I have.
Yep.
And have lots of interview clips and, you know, ranked, like, the first presentation, mostly for other faculty, was all, you know, what is Berkeley doing well to prepare people for careers outside music, and what can we do better? And, you know, okay, 30% of people said this, and, you know, little examples. So I did that, and then what I did last day was just on music business majors, because they're about half the folks I've spoken with.
Sure.
And, you know, I actually did, another professor brought his class there, because they're all looking, like, what leads someone to be successful in their career. And so that's mostly that. And I guess, you know, the impetus to do this was, I mentioned that former chair who told me to make myself indispensable. Well, I was hired as an instructor to teach one class after the math person quit 2 weeks before the semester started. And I'd actually just been working as a private tutor with one of the professors who were in Berkeley then went, "Oh my God, does anyone know anyone who teaches math?" Yeah, I never applied. I just got an email one day like, "Hey, want to teach a class at Berkeley?" I mean, since then, I was, you know, got a fuller course load, got promoted, you know, to assistant professor, and then promoted to associate and converted to full-time.
That's great.
And part of being converted to full-time involves you have to do some sort of research or some sort of, quote, service to the profession. And I was like, hey, no one studied the Berkeley grads who work outside of music, and they're a substantial fraction of Berkeley grads. We know nothing about them. Someone has to shine a spotlight, and I guess that'll be me.
That's excellent, Kevin.
Thank you. Hey, back to the question.
Sure.
So, and I alluded to this, right? So people may look at this other BerkeleyGrads.com page, and you're, again, like, interview number 63.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be there under, you know, I'll probably put you under either nonprofits or administration. Point is, you'll be there under, like, nonprofit management.
Okay.
And, right, so who's going to listen to the interview? People who are in, look at that and click on it.
Right.
So for people who are interested in working either in nonprofit management or just in the nonprofit sector in general, do you have any specific tips for them?
That's a great question. First of all, find a cause that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. What draws me into the YMCA now is that it's really so many different causes in one. It's youth development, it's social responsibility, it's healthy living, it's arts and humanities. It's cancer survivorship. It's really just the whole hodgepodge of affecting people from, you know, birth to the grave. But, you know, maybe people don't like things that are that broad. So if you're going to find a nonprofit, find one that's fighting for a cause that you're really passionate about. The second thing is don't be prepared to make a lot of money right off the bat. The nonprofit field in any job, you're probably going to end up making less than you would do in the for-profit counterpart. Mm-hmm. But I find at the end of the day, you end up feeling a lot better about yourself. You can make a lot of money working for a nonprofit, but you have to be willing to give it time. And I would say, going back to your be indispensable comment, make sure that you do that. Make sure that, you know, the secret line at the end of every job description is, and everything else we can think of. Really, really don't worry about doing that everything else they can think of. Because nonprofits are generally mission driven, and as long as you're buying into that mission, you're really just, it doesn't matter what your title is, you're making just as big an impact. It's important what you're doing, and so don't say, "I'm not going to pick this thing up on the floor because I'm not the custodian." It's you're doing everything. You care about the organization. You're moving it forward together. So that would be my advice.
Well, that's great. Yeah, just have one last question for you.
Sure.
Which is, you have the mic, and you're being recorded.
Yeah.
So, is there anything else you'd like to say, or anything we missed?
I love Berkeley. My time at Berkeley was immeasurably wonderful. I still try to get up there as much as I can. As I mentioned, I came for that alumni day a couple of years ago when they opened the 160 building. Mm-hmm. I'm a proud graduate. My degree is on the wall behind me. So I would say, whether you're going into a forever music career or you just are really passionate about music and want an experience like any other, Berkeley was the best experience, the best choice I could have made in my young adult life. So I appreciate the opportunities that Berkeley has created for me.
Well, that's terrific. Thank you. Thank you so much. Sure, folks will be really happy to hear that. And I'm glad you feel that way about Berkeley. We're proud of you too, man.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
You did good. Hey, thanks again for having this conversation. I really had lot of fun listening to this really great trajectory you've been on. And I could hear your passion for what you do.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Well, hey, best of luck to you, and look for a message from me in the near future.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
Lexi, take care.